The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But now, a new report from Human Rights Watch has accused Israel of committing war crimes by forcible transfer and ethnic cleansing in Gaza. UNICEF has said that no place is safe for children in the enclave. And as Israel's operation is continuing there, they're also continuing airstrikes and their ground offensive in Lebanon. To get an update from on the ground, we're going to Beirut to speak to James Elder of UNICEF. And a warning before we start, we're going to be discussing injuries to victims, including children. James, good morning.
Pat, hi there. Good morning.
What is the situation in Lebanon? How many people are being displaced and how intensive are the Israeli attacks?
Yeah, this is without a doubt the deadliest phase of this war. I mean, when it comes to displacement of children and when it comes to the killing of children, it's the worst it's been for 20 years. And I think amid the child casualties, with this displacement, hundreds of thousands of children again. And I think sometimes, Pat, it can sound like a soft word, displacement. Of course, for children, it's being forced out of your home. It's painful. It's a terrifying upheaval. And now, ironically, all these children are sleeping in classrooms. It's a place of last, you know, it's a lifeline, but it's actually meant for learning. And kids leave with nothing, Pat. You know, I sat with two 11-year-old girls yesterday, one of them clutching onto a doll because she managed to get that out. The other girl explaining she left with nothing. So for me, I feel like I'm witnessing chilling parallels just in terms of people being shunted from place to place and the level of indiscriminate attacks that I've seen so much in Gaza. So yeah, it's a horrific time for you know, almost every child again here in Lebanon, Pat.
Now, are children being killed in any great numbers?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we're so desensitized now in terms of numbers that since, you know, in the last 50 days, it's about three girls and boys being killed every day. Now, thank goodness they are not Gaza numbers. Let's hope we don't see Gaza numbers again in our lifetime. But of course, if you're the parent of that child, then your world has just fallen apart. And it's children killed. It's also, I sat with a little girl yesterday, a little 6-year-old girl who is, she's got shrapnel in the back of her head, Pat, so she's got brain damage and she's lying there, just the sweetest little face, but she's a shell of herself. And I asked her mum, how was she before this? And she said she was like a butterfly. She's then showing me photos, Pat, of this little girl with, you know, pink braids and dance, a 6-year-old girl. So children are killed, but then you also see childhood destroyed. So, and again, this does speak to the force and the indiscriminate nature of so many of these attacks.
The difficulty with children who themselves are injured and then trying to explain to them that mummy's dead and daddy's dead and maybe more of the extended family are dead, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I don't know how they're done. Yesterday, it was on a couple of days ago, I had a moment with a little boy, Ali, who's 2.5. And when go back a step, Pat, when I first heard in Gaza, the first time I ever was sitting with a boy who got rushed into a hospital and his whole body was broken and burns and so forth. And his carer was whispering to me and I didn't understand why. And he was saying that this little guy does not yet know that his entire family, mum, dad and siblings and grandparents, they're all dead. I never thought I would hear that story. And then over my many visits to Gaza, Pat, I've heard it dozens of times. It every time floors you, and yet it's no longer unique. And here I am now hearing it in Gaza, this little boy, Ali, lying there with an amputated arm, hadn't spoken for 2 weeks. And now in the last few days, counsellors, psychologists are speaking to him and they're explaining, Pat, that, listen, Ali, your mum, your dad, your sister, your grandparents, everyone's dead. I had the same story yesterday. A family was leaving to Syria. They hadn't told that little boy yet that you go to the right moment. How does one do this? So again, these horrific parallels that I feel like I'm seeing.
So it's recurring in Lebanon, what you have seen, maybe to a greater extent in Gaza. What is the word from Gaza? Because, you know, with the news cycle, Gaza goes off the headlines. But I'm sure the displacement continues. The removal of people probably permanently from their home place continues.
Yeah, exactly. Spot on, Pat. I mean, Gaza is, we're a place where I think suffering stretches the limit of what we thought was possible in terms of ongoing mass casualty events, in terms of despite everyone's best efforts of aid, you know, seeing now we again with the famine on the doorstep. I mean, the aid agencies have pushed everything possible and have not been allowed in any sizable number into the north. Rescue teams are attacked. Hospitals are attacked. You know, winter in the south, and last month, 10% of the sort of tents and tarpaulins and blankets was able to be delivered to people. And it's happening in plain view. Yes, international journalists are banned for a clear reason, but I think now that it should be painfully clear. And yet there are those with influence who have allowed these atrocities to continue, whether it's the killing of so many thousands of girls or boys, or whether it's the lethal restrictions of aid that have allowed, you know, polio to hit, and now the threat of famine. And bizarrely, incredulously, Pat, yeah, the worst for those people on their knees is seemingly yet to come.
The difficulty for ordinary people is that they, in Lebanon, there's a vacuum in the sense that the government is not terribly effective. And trying to explain to them why this is happening. I mean, they have no culpability in any shape or form that anything that has been perpetrated by any of the warring parties, if you like, and yet they are the victims.
No, exactly. And it's just, I sat with a man yesterday, and again, family home that he spent 15 years saving to build, his crop destroyed in a minute, his crops destroyed in a minute, his cows destroyed in a minute. And yet at the same time, this man is in a shelter and his 14-year-old daughter has learned pretty good English and Spanish in the last 6 weeks. People will continue, but yeah, they're continuing despite the worst efforts of everyone around them. And it's for an organization like UNICEF too, Pat, here, you know, we have the front line keeps moving because there is no clear rhyme or reason to the bombardments, but we have access across Lebanon for our nutrition, water, sanitation, this full package, but we're less than 20% funded. I find that's a very bitter pill for children to swallow when you were able to reach them, and that yet, you know, you don't have the hygiene kits for teenage girls. You don't have enough for child psychologists for the trauma children are facing. That feels to me a trauma on top of a trauma, given it's not huge amounts of money, but it's just not coming from the international community.
So this is a situation very different to Gaza, where you do have access to those who are affected, but you can't help them in many cases.
Yeah, exactly. Gaza is the most dangerous theatre I think any humanitarians have worked in, and are now utterly exhausted as well by a war of words. They are well aware of the blockades and how long we get forced to sit at borders. Are well aware that, you know, around 10 or 15% of convoys to the north were given any type of approval in October, the month that was meant to be the month, one of the worst, if not the worst month. And that level of frustration is maddening, because they have the supplies, they have the very, very brave partners, and it's blocked at a time. It's not just blocked, Pat, but, you know, the narrative in the world is that there's as much aid as people need. That is a very cruel discussion when people are being, you know, restricted to a level of famine-like conditions where families simply don't have anything like the medicines or the food that they require, and yet the narrative is that it's fine. I mean, I've spoken a lot because of my last mission a month ago, Pat, where I just saw dozens and dozens of children who had somehow miraculously survived these brutal attacks, but they have wounds like I've not seen. I didn't know there was such a thing as a fourth-degree burn. They're in hospitals, Pat, and 2,500 children are denied medical evacuation. They all need it. Some have cancer. Some have, you know, everyday illnesses. Many others, you know, will die without that care. And the care is 100 kilometres away, and they're denied it. And I wake every day to another message saying, you know, this little girl you met, well, they just amputated her right leg now as well as her left arm because she has a blood clot. She can't get out. 2,500 children. You know, we are 90% reduction on children being medically evacuated to what we were 6 months ago. If anything speaks to the utter disregard for children in the war in Gaza, to me, it's that thousands of children somehow survived, could get the care, could survive, but are being forced to stay in hospitals where medical attention is denied, and they are denied the right to leave to a place where healthcare is prevalent.
Now, you talk about children surviving, but the quality of their survival, given what they've been through, both psychologically and physically, I mean, what kind of life lies ahead?
Pat, it's a great question. I've tried so many times with child psychologists to get a sense, and they will tell me time and again, James, we are in uncharted territory. We have never seen a situation where every single child in a place will need mental health care. But right now, of course, they're still very, very much in a theatre of war. I sat with a Palestinian child psychologist last month in Gaza, and she said, James, I'm really fearful that I'm going to have a breakdown. Yeah, I can't do this anymore. She's in a tent every day. She's coming and seeing children, you know, with either psychological, it's obviously, you know, a lot of these children are amputees, but, you know, it's the invisible scars that she's trying to deal with. She herself is very close to breaking. And her great concern, Pat, is that we're nowhere close to seeing the level of trauma she feels only when this whole thing ends, when children go back and see the rubble that was their home, when they realize how many friends have been killed, then she believes we'll start to get a sense. And how do Gazan children recover from this? Look, you have people, one of the highest education literacy rates on the planet. No matter what crisis has hit them in the last 20 years, they have done everything to keep those children in school. And that's why, Gazans are so regarded in universities by employers around the region. This is a crisis they've never seen before. This is one where UNICEF, we're so desperately fearful that they will lose a generation of children. Give Gazans a chance, they will somehow give these children a chance. But right now, they remain under bombardment from every possible angle. So education and the psychology is teetering.
Finally, James, are you hearing any murmurs at all of optimism about a potential ceasefire now that matters have been resolved in the United States?
It's such a great question, Pat. I have caught myself before you asked that thing. I almost wanted to apologise because it's so utterly gloomy that I share. But it's my words do not capture the gravity of what children and families are enduring. But no, on a ceasefire, no. I think it's been very clear to people in Gaza for many, many, many months that the ceasefire discussions are worse than not eventuating. That they've become a charade. So those people in Gaza have been very clear, at least since late March, when the Security Council finally voted for a ceasefire, and families started promising their children that I promise you will wake up tomorrow morning. And of course, that ceasefire didn't happen, and those promises were blown away. So no, to tap into the stories that Gazans tell me, they have lost utter faith in the international community when it comes to any type of international law or coming to their rescue.
Well, James, it's incredible work that UNICEF does, but underfunded. So anything that Irish people can do, however small, in helping UNICEF at this troubled time, we know that however small the contribution is, it'll go a long way in Lebanon and Gaza. James Elder of UNICEF in Beirut, thank you very much for joining.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.